Welcome, everyone, to the ProWrestling.net All Access Podcast. My name is Chris Shore, and joining me, as always, is Jake Barnett. And we are here to do your SmackDown audio review. Usually you guys get these on Saturday mornings, but here it is Wednesday morning. Happy July 4th to you. Hopefully you're hearing this on Wednesday, and I can say this on the front end. Have a safe and happy 4th of July. Please be careful if you're out there with fireworks. We'll be sending plenty off, but I want to go ahead and get that out there on the front end. I used to be in EMS, and 4th of July was always a bad day to work. You knew something was going to happen. Everybody be safe there, but Jake and I are here to talk about the Great American Bash version of SmackDown. Jake and I get together every week to talk about SmackDown, or just about every week to talk about WWE SmackDown. Again, usually on Saturday mornings, we do it all access for all of the readers of ProWrestling.net. But it's not the only audio that's done every week here for the site. But almost everything we do is exclusive to our members. Jason Powell does a WWE Raw audio review each week, as does Will Pruitt with the TNA Impact Wrestling audio review. Jake and Will get together usually on Wednesdays through the .NET Countdown. I'll actually be doing that with Jake this week. Will's not able to make it. I do an audio slant, which just anything that catches my fancy for the week. Jason Powell does a Q&A audio where he answers both wrestling and non-wrestling questions. And Jason and I get together every Thursday for our flagship show. We call it .NET Weekly. We review all the news of the week and often break news that's not made its way to the site yet. If you'd like access to all of that audio each week, plus access to the ad-free version of the site, access to the .NET member forum, and access to the .NET members blog section, all you got to do is head on over to ProWrestling.net, look on the right-hand side of the page, and click on the .NET member sign-up link. That'll get you started. $7.50 a month. We'll get you 30 days, $5.50 if you want to take the annual option. So with that out of the way, let's go ahead and bring in Jake. And Jake, live Tuesday SmackDown, a theme show, Great American Bash, here for a holiday. The very first thing we see is the traditional live Tuesday SmackDown holiday party that we always get. Were you on the same page as I am, especially when that very first thing opens up, the screen comes live, and the first thing we see is that party that they always do? Were you thinking, oh, God, no, this is going to be another one of those SmackDowns?
Yeah, you know, it immediately brings to mind the brutal Christmas special this past year with Mick Foley and Hornswoggle getting his voice back from Santa Claus, and, you know, the typical, over-the-top holiday stuff that WWE tends to do. So, it immediately brings to mind those events, but luckily, I guess for us, they managed to keep the holiday party screen time pretty limited, so it wasn't as offensive and grating as normal.
So yeah, we were both looking for a bad show, but I think we're also kind of both in agreement that, you know, once you accept there was going to be some holiday filler and there was some some traditional holiday garbage in there, and considering that stuff wasn't as bad as it could have been, all things being equal, especially for a Tuesday live version of SmackDown, it's a pretty good show. I mean, it's not. Before we started recording, you said it wasn't as good as Raw Monday night, and I absolutely agree, but it was a pretty good show, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, in comparison to just the Super Tuesday SmackDowns that they've done recently over the last 6 months or so, I'd say it was a much better show than those. I mean, I guess it's probably a mediocre show in comparison to what we normally get from a SmackDown, but yeah, I mean, I was entertained by it. It wasn't one of those shows that I was kind of, you know, tapping my feet, looking at my watch, waiting for it to be over. So that's usually a pretty good sign.
Yeah, I felt the 2 hours went by pretty quickly. It never really dragged anywhere, and there were a couple of really good moments. There were some things that were done that were, you know, kind of filler, but I also thought gave some smart payoffs to things that had been sitting out there that needed to be resolved, and I like the way they did it. So we'll talk about the whole thing from start to finish. We are going into Money in the Bank, and I guess the big news coming out of this, we have two big news. There were two major events coming out of this. The first that two more men have qualified for the World Heavyweight Championship Money in the Bank match. They are Cody Rhodes, who, as the storyline goes, lobbied the board of directors for another match. Teddy Long booked him to face Christian, who Teddy had pointed out Cody had not beaten yet. He did beat Christian to make it into the Money in the Bank match, as did Dolph Ziggler, who defeated Alex Riley to qualify You look at that list now, and let me get it up here just to make sure I've got it right. It's, of course, now Spiller and Cody Rhodes, along with Damian Sandow, Tyson Kidd, Lord Tensai, Santino Marella, and Christian. That's seven men now in that match. And, this certainly is setting up to be the more athletic of the two Money in the Bank matches. And, B, do you think Dolph Ziggler is a hands-on favorite to win this thing right now?
You would think so. I mean, with all the attention that, you know, they've been giving him, you know, in promos where he's been talking about taking it to the next level, and he's had title shots recently where he's taken Sheamus to the absolute limit multiple times. So you'd have to think that the trajectory that he's on, you know, would lead you to believe that he's got to be the favorite to win this match. And if he doesn't, I mean, what is it they have planned for him? I would think, you know, just the way that they have this mapped out, it would seem like he would be the stone cold lock of the night, I guess, as the football people used to say.
Yeah, Cody was the guy who qualified first earlier in the night, and I said, well, Cody's my personal favorite now to win Money in the Bank. And then a couple commercials later, we get Dolph Ziggler qualifying, and it was, forget everything I said about Cody, Ziggler is now my favorite to win. Somebody tweeted me after the show based on that. Ziggler's already main event. Cody's the guy who needs the ability to step up. And I don't agree. I mean, I don't disagree that Ziggler's closer to the main event than Cody Rhodes is, but I do disagree that Dolph Ziggler is seen as a main event player right now. He's been all around it. He's wrestled all those guys. He's had some title matches. But he doesn't feel like a main eventer yet, and he needs something like the Money in the Bank to make him a legitimate main eventer, and so I think he's the guy that they got to put over there. And then, of course, there's the WWE title match or title ladder match or the Money in the Bank match, which is exclusively to Raw, and I'm sure that's still going to be changing some over there. That was a little more star-studded and kind of terrifying. There's a lot of money in one match and in a match, a ladder match, that's known for breaking people.
Yeah, that was my first thought. You know, when they first announced those four guys last week, it was just like, you look at the who's in that match, and it's like, well, Kane and Cho aren't going to do a whole lot of bumping around, and you know, Cena is far too valuable to them at this point to risk any seriously crazy bumps for him. So it's like, well, I guess Jericho is going to be the proverbial horse's ass during that match. You know, he's going to be flying all over the place, I guess, you know, if they really want to work in some of those ladder spots. I guess that, you know, it's possible that we may see something out of the ordinary from Big Show and Kane, but it's either going to be a much different match than we normally see from Money in the Bank, or Chris Jericho is going to be, flying around like a monkey.
Well, my guess is before it's all said and done, we end up with a Kofi Kingston or somebody like that, you know, a couple of those people in that match to take the big spots. You know, they're there to be murder victims. Because, like you said, you can't have John Cena getting powerbombed on the ladder. It's just, there's too much money in John Cena. Whether you love the guy or hate the guy, you have to admit there's too much money in John Cena for the guy to be taking powerbombs on ladders. And, like I said, Show and Kane aren't going to be able to do a whole lot. And there's Jericho. And he's not a spring chicken anymore. I mean, he's on up there in age for as far as for things like ladder matches go. Plus, he's in the middle of a big tour. That's going on, and with Fozzy, and I guess it's just before, because that's where it starts till in August. But there's going to be something added to that. There's a lot of money to protect there. We're going to have some ringers placed into that match for sure. The other big news coming out: Zack Ryder wins the Great American Bash Battle Royal to become the GM for next week only, and just on SmackDown. So instead of having one person being GM for both next week, they're going to have whoever it is for Raw and Zack Ryder for SmackDown. Do you like the choice, and do you like how they got there with him, basically defeating Kane? Kane was the last person eliminated, and Ryder was able to get a little bit of the beat back.
Yeah, you know, I was kind of surprised in a good way that it's Ryder. You know, I think he's definitely got kind of a feud simmering with Damian Sandow, so I'm sure they'll address that in some way. And they didn't go with any of the blatantly obvious choices like Del Rio or Daniel Bryan or AJ or something. They went with a guy who you wouldn't expect and somebody who can interact with people backstage and hopefully, they'll have some good performances, around him too to make the show a little more enjoyable. But I was happy to see Ryder in that role. You know, he's not really doing anything at this point at Money in the Bank, so it'll be interesting to see if he can find a way to get on that card somehow as the GM.
He's a funny guy. I mean, he could be entertaining in this role in short term. I mean, I think it's a crime. I mean, I think it is absolutely criminal the way they have just buried this guy. That, you know, he got himself over. He did everything that you're supposed to do. But it just seems like, and it may not be the case, but it is the perception at least, that with WWE, if you don't, if they don't come up with it, if you come up with it yourself, they're not nearly as excited about it. And we've seen the way they've changed his program. He's had it edited. I know at least one major time he was vocally upset about it with his The True Long Island Story. And, he got over and got big, and then they just fed him to Kane, and he never got anything over on Kane. And I just think what they've done to the kid is criminal. But with that being said, it is absolutely great to see him in this role. I don't know how entertaining it's going to be, but I trust Zack Ryder to at least attempt and work very, very hard with whatever he's given to make it entertaining, because I think he can be a lot of fun to watch at times. And so it's like you said, it was a pleasant surprise, certainly, to see Ryder as the guy they picked to go over in that Great American Bash Battle Royal. And we will talk about the Battle Royal when we get to the main event. But let's take this thing from start to finish. It was live from Corpus Christi, Texas. And again, we got the opening with the 4th of July party. Hornswoggle was in a kiddie pool with a few of the divas throwing water on him. He had a snorkel on, in the kiddie pool, and the floaties and the ring and whatnot. And people were, off in various groups. Natalya was talking about how great Bret Hart was. Just a number of things going on. Teddy Long walks in wearing, it's like a barbecue chef's hat sort of thing, and he's all decked out in red, white, and blue. Welcomes all of them and the WWE Universe to the live Super SmackDown. He said, everybody have a good time. Don't worry about making a mess because someone has volunteered to clean it up. The camera panned over to find Eve standing there in like a plain white, not a French maid's outfit, which would have been probably too much for most people, but just a plain white linen dress type thing. And she had the big "Hello, my name is Eve" thing on her chest like Teddy had to do. They all kind of booed her and threw some things at her. At that point, Teddy introduces the U.S. champion, of course, Santino Marella. Santino says he's going to, said a few words about being the U.S. champion, and said he was going to light the ceremonial barbecue, and he pulled out a stick lighter and was trying to light it. Teddy, started calling his name, Santino, Santino, Santino. Finally, they stop and look, and then all the music stops, and there's Kane standing there looking all vicious. Kane raises his arms and slams them down like he does, and the pyro pops inside the grill. The grill bursts into flames. Kane walks off, and everyone starts dancing because Teddy says, let's get this party started. I mean, this was the first thing out of the gate, and it was just as stupid as it could be. But it was short, and I think they only did like three or maybe four of these. Usually they were all very short. Usually they'd go on forever. This one, again, relatively speaking, short, so it wasn't so bad. And I gotta admit, it was so absurd for Kane to pop his pyro to light the grill that I had to laugh. I hate to admit it, but God dang it, they got me.
Yeah, I mean, it was a cute moment. I mean, it was definitely better than the average as these segments go. I mean, at least it was, a little bit of absurdist humor instead of the typical stuff only Vince and Kevin Dunn seem to find funny. And that's kind of what they avoided tonight, so that was a good thing.
We get the standard opening video at that point, followed by the pyro. Michael Cole, Josh Matthews, and Booker T check in on commentary. They hype the Battle Royal for later, and we get Ricardo Rodriguez introducing Alberto Del Rio. Del Rio comes to the ring. They show the video of him beating up Sin Cara Monday night on Raw, which I thought did a lot of good for the guy. And then he cut a pretty good promo here. He's not been very good here recently, but he did this one pretty well. He wasn't there to talk about wishing America happy birthday. He was there to talk about more important things, Alberto Del Rio. He said he was finally going to get his one-on-one title shot, and he was going to send Sheamus back to Ireland crying. The fans were a lot like Sheamus, peasants and hooligans. He fired some sort of insult in Spanish that I didn't quite catch. He said everyone tried to mooch off successful people like him, and then said he came to, you know, he made a lot of money in Mexico, but he came to America legally, and he wanted to send Sheamus back home where he belonged, and all the people there, all of you, where you deserve to go. So he gets out of the ring and goes up to someone and says, show me your papers. And so he starts going through the crowd, show me your papers, show me your papers. Finally picks one guy, show me your papers, you're an illegal alien. And the guy says, no, I mean, you know, he gets picked up on Del Rio's mic, so obviously he's a plant. He says, this isn't Arizona, this is Texas, which gets a big pop. Del Rio gets mad, acts like he's going to go after the guy. Sheamus music hits to stop him. Sheamus storms down to the ring, beats him up, starts throwing he and Ricardo all over the place. They fight back to the car, and then Ricardo jumps on Sheamus' back, allowing Del Rio to hit a roundhouse kick. Del Rio jumps on him, starts punching him, and while Ricardo Rodriguez opens up the hood of the car. And was that a Rolls Royce or a Bentley? I mean, it was supposed to be an expensive car, obviously. I didn't catch what type it was.
Yeah, it looked like a Rolls Royce to me. I mean, I didn't hear Cole announce the year and the model like he normally does. So, but it looked like a classic Rolls Royce.
That's what I thought too. I'm not a car guy, so I thought I'd check with you to make sure. But he pops the hood on the Royals Royce and says, you know, starts pointing to it and tells, you know, Del Rio, put him in there, slam the hood on. So Del Rio does. He puts Sheamus in there, slams the hood down a few times, really jacks it back at one point. I thought he looked like he was maybe trying to break the hood off. I hope it was a replica Rolls Royce and not a real Rolls Royce that was out there getting just demolished by him. Sheamus slumps to the ground, and the refs come out to check on him, and that's how we go into the first commercial. Del Rio, I thought, was effective with his promo and got a lot of good heat here. He has been marginalized. We've talked about it a million times. He's been marginalized, and he's been not very good. I thought, A, he was good here tonight, and B, it got him some heat. It gave him a little bit more of that badass that I think he had before the feud with Edge that really ruined him. That he's got some of that badass back between what happened Monday and what happened here on SmackDown, and that's a good thing because he really needed it in that feud with Shane.
Yeah, you know, he used to be the guy we talk about as the only heel that would actually just go out there and beat people, and that's been long gone for a year now. So it was nice to see him to look dominant in a few segments, both yesterday and today. And yeah, I thought he was. Yeah, you're correct. He was more effective here in his promo. I still don't think he really gets outside the box that he built for himself. You know, when he debuted, it's still pretty much the same character and the same promo week after week, and I wish they'd work on getting him a little bit more varied in how he approaches promos. But he definitely looked better here, and it was nice to see a strong champion and Sheamus show a little bit of vulnerability and actually give Del Rio a little something heading into their match. I mean, I don't really expect Del Rio to win, but I definitely appreciate that they're at least making an attempt to throw the finish into doubt at Money in the Bank. Chris, you there?
I'm my new phone. I keep hitting it with my cheek, turning the mute button on. But dealing with it in .NET Weekly. My apologies. But no, you're right. He's got a long way to go, but he's still much better tonight. And you mentioned Sheamus showing some vulnerability. We got more of it than I expected when we got back from commercial. They replayed pretty much so the whole beatdown part of the segment, and then we cut back to Sheamus, who's still being helped by referees, and then you got pretty nice trickle of blood coming down his head. I'm going to assume that's hard way from getting his head bounced up and down in the car, but. Wow, be careful there, Sheamus, for reason to knock yourself out for a spot like that.
Yeah, that was it definitely did not look like one of those razor blade spots. It it looked kind of like at a funny jagged angle. So I'm assuming you're correct that he must have gotten nicked somehow underneath the hood of the car. And, yeah, definitely, you know, they could have gone a little bit easier if that's the result. I doubt that was actually the intended result.
Yeah, you know, it's just real quick, because I don't want to spend a lot of time on this, because I mean, there's no real reason to, but just I want to say, you know, Vince is so against the idea of blood, and I get it, I understand, he thinks it's you know, barbaric and archaic and all those sorts of things, but you got to admit here, I mean, when, especially when you don't expect it, and Sheamus pops up and there's a trickle of blood running down your forehead, you stop and go, whoa, he got busted open. I mean, it does... Even if you agree with Vince, you have to at least concede that it does add, I mean, it is a drama vehicle. It does add drama to a situation. I mean, tell me you weren't more, not blown away, maybe the wrong term, but you weren't more affected by Sheamus having blood trickling down his head as opposed to if he hadn't.
Yeah, no, I think, you know, if it's used judiciously, it's great for building drama in a match and in a feud like this. I think, you know, Vince is probably... you know, thinking of the, you know, death match bloodbaths that, or even the anything Ric Flair or Hulk Hogan are involved
right.
in for the last 5 years. But, you know, it's there's moderation there that can be used to great effect. I'm with him if, you know, in terms of the death match stuff. But I think a little bit like what we saw tonight can add something to a feud.
Absolutely agree. First match of the night, Great Khali and Layla defeating Antonio Cesaro and Oksana at 1:55. What I liked about this match, and it was, you know, it's a two-minute match. It was what it was. What I liked about this match is it gave the air. Teddy Long obviously booked this match. It gave the air like Teddy got some revenge, but Cesaro didn't play part in the actual finish. It was Oksana taking the layout from Layla. And so the women were involved in the finish. So since he wasn't involved with the finish, he doesn't actually lose anything. So they're able to have some semblance of closure to that storyline, which I hated, but at least they paid it off. And they did it in a way without taking heat off of the former Claudio Castagnoli. So, if you're going to blow it off and, you know, they're going to say, okay, we're going to tie up this loose end, which, again, I appreciate. I like the way they did it, even if it was just a 1:55 match.
Yeah, you know, and I hope this is the end. Like, let's move on from this, please. I don't even know if they want Oksana to be with Cesaro much longer, if at all. I mean, maybe, you know, it might make sense for, you know, another segment for them to break it off. But, I mean, I think Cesaro is at the point where he's, you know, he's mature enough in the ring and on the microphone that he really doesn't need a valet. He needs a fresh story. I think it's time for a full stop on this story and a fresh start for him, because he definitely deserves a real shot at a real story in WWE.
Absolutely. Looking forward to seeing what they do with him next. We go backstage where Cody Rhodes is laughing at Teddy Long's outfit. They jaw around for a while. Cody reminds Teddy that, or he says, haven't you heard? I get the opportunity. The board of directors heard my appeal and granted it. They're going to give me another Money in the Bank qualifying match. Teddy said he knew and that the board of directors had entrusted him to pick his opponent. And so he has picked a man that Cody had not beat yet, and it was Intercontinental Champion Christian. He goes, or have you not heard that? And then he left, leaving Cody, of course, standing there pissed off. You know, it was an effective little promo to get to the match. We went to commercial when we came back. We had Mick Foley's favorite Raw moment, which was him winning the title from The Rock in 99, which, of course, is the infamous Nitro, Tony Schiavone, that put butts in the seats comment about Mick Foley winning the championship. Nice little video package for that 1,000th Raw. But then we got our second match of the night, Cody Rhodes defeating Christian in a Money in the Bank qualifier match at 9:11. And finish on this came, Cody had worked the arm a lot. Christian hooked the kill switch but sold the arm, preventing him from being able to hit it. Cody grabbed him from behind and hit the crossroads for the win, clean victory. And then Cody celebrated a lot about being in the match. 9-minute match, easily 4 minutes of it, roughly, in commercial, so only got about 5 minutes. I mean, it was what it was. It was neither great nor terrible. It was entertaining enough to keep my attention, but I'm not going to be talking about it tomorrow. When I go to do my hit list, you know, in the morning, I'm not going to think about it first thing when I sit down to write. It for either list, neither hit nor miss, but you know, not a bad match either.
No, I mean, it's newsworthy, you know, for the reason that Rhodes gets into the Money in the Bank match, but this was,
right,
you know, a pretty pedestrian television match, really. I mean, we, like you said, we saw 4 minutes of it on television, and of what we saw, probably the last 2 minutes of it were relatively fast-paced. I mean, the finishing sequence was nice because they tied up, you know, what they were telling in the ring with the arm injury and you know, Rhodes picking up an unexpected victory. You know, he's been on a pretty sorry losing streak for a while now, so you know, it's nice to see him get a bump in the right direction. So, for you know, the match was good for that reason, but you know, it's not something you, if you'd seen it before, you'd want to go back and watch it again or anything.
We go backstage to the party again. Zack Ryder tells Teddy Long he wants to be the DJ. He's got all the great bands on his iPod. He's got Bieber. He's got Backstreet Boys, whatever the crap else he listens to. Heath Slater comes up, says he's going to be the entertainment. He starts singing his one-man rock band song. They throw food at him to chase him away. And so Ryder goes back and presses play on his iPod, which cues somebody call my mama, and the Funkasaurus and the Dancing Girls came out. Everybody danced with him. They all got like they were doing a country line dance, except they were doing Funkasaurus. We went to commercial. When we came back from commercial, at this point, like I said, I'm convinced that Cody Rhodes is the guy who's going to win Money in the Bank. Alex Riley standing in the ring. Vicky Guerrero gets to come out and make her excuse me entrance for our third match of the night. Dolph Ziggler qualifying for the world title Money in the Bank ladder match by defeating Alex Riley at 2 minutes and 26 seconds. Standard 2 minute match. Ziggler wins with the zigzag. Not very impressive, but yeah, again, you know, once this happened, it's forget everything I said about Cody. Here's the guy who's probably going to win the ladder match, and quite frankly, is the guy who should win the ladder match. I just really wish they had done more to make it feel special that he was going in, because, you know, wow, he beat Alex Riley. It's not like he had to work that hard. You know, Cody had to work hard to get in. He beat Alex Riley.
Yeah, I mean, Riley hasn't been treated as anything to write home about on WWE TV since, you know, his blow-off feud with The Miz. But I was surprised by the amount of offense he got in. I mean, I don't know if you recall the match in as much detail as I'm thinking of right now, but it felt like 2 minutes of Riley getting the better of Ziggler, and then you know maybe 30 seconds of Ziggler getting that. I think he hung Riley on the top rope, hit the zigzag, and then it was over. I mean, he literally got maybe three or four moves of offense in the entire match, and most of it was Riley surprising him with roll ups after his mistakes and whatnot. So, you know, I guess it was good for both of them in that sense. I mean, you know, Riley, by all looks of everything, you know, is pretty solid in the ring. He just hasn't really picked up any steam character-wise, and God, it must be at least a year now, right? When was the last time he had his feud with The Miz? It was the last time anybody cared about him, so I think that was at least 8 months ago, if not more. So I want Ziggler to win Money in the Bank. I think he's ready for the world title, and I'd like to see people like Riley get some storyline support. It seems like we talk about the lower and middle of the card suffering in that respect, and it doesn't seem like they're moving a whole lot in that way as of right now, and it's kind of disappointing.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not surprised. You're right that Riley had in a ton of offense, and I'm not surprised because the money in Ziggler isn't his ability to sell and make people look like $1 million. I mean, he made Riley look absolutely credible today from the very first drop kick. I mean, they started face-to-face. Riley hit a standing drop kick, and Ziggler sold it like he'd been shot. I mean, he that's his money. And this match was perfect in kind of defending my argument that he needs to be the Ric Flair-like character who can make people look like $1 million and then walk away with either the victory or retaining the title or whatever, and yet the other person still looks like $1 million. He's not holding the title, but everybody sees him as the winner. And yet Flair was able to keep, you know, prestige on that title because he held it forever. A guy like Ziggler is custom-made to fit that role, to make other people look great. So I'm not surprised by it in the least, and my guess is we're going to see something absolutely ridiculous from that guy at the Money in the Bank match. But, yeah, I mean, that's what they need to do is put the title on him and have babyfaces chase him and come up short just like Riley did tonight. But on the same hand, he's going to make him look like a gazillion dollars. I mean, the guy is the best seller in the industry today. I watch a lot of wrestling, and I mean, I don't claim obviously to see it all, but I watch a lot of indies and all three major promotions. I can't think of a single person who sells like him. Does anybody come close?
No, and you think they'd be touting him more than they do. And he's the only, guy to really grow up entirely in WWE developmental that has managed to become a real breakout star. So you'd think they'd have a little bit more pride in him than they do, it seems, at times. I mean, you mentioned that they don't like to push anything that they didn't create. Well, if anybody is something that they created, it's Dolph Ziggler. And a lot of that has to do with his talent, obviously. But, he's entirely a product of their system. So you got to wonder why he hasn't achieved more than he has already. But it sure seems like, we've been talking about him being on the cusp of something great for a while now.
Excellent point. After the commercial, we got a video hyping the Raw going to 3 hours on July 23rd on that 1,000th episode. Michael Cole stood in the ring, and, of course, his "May I Have Your Attention, Please" bit. He introduced AJ, who skipped down to the ring. He asked her, he made some sort of joke. He said, "I've interviewed you before. I've tried to be fair and balanced, but you haven't," which is opposite of what you've been here recently, because you've not been very balanced. She started to say, she goes, you know Cole, and started to respond, but he took the mic away, and he just had her stop and said, "Let's talk about, what you did, because people who were balanced wouldn't do what you did last night on Raw." And they played a video, a really creepy kind of video, very Kane-esque type video, if you can imagine, recapped all her different events last night, the Rose moment with Brian, the cell phone moment with CM Punk, and the moment with Eve, and it just all, everything that went on with Raw, and it would be cut in with pictures of her making crazy faces on her knees on the ramp, just different stuff, and they have it real distorted, almost like Salvador Dali had painted her face or whatever, and just played through everything that happened on Raw with all that kind of cut in. He asked her what the hell she was thinking, and she started to respond, and again he pulled the mic away and said, "I'll tell you what you were thinking. I'll answer the question. It's obvious you weren't thinking, and that's why he thought the board of directors were making a mistake by putting her as the referee in the WWE title match." He started to run her down at that point, saying that she was nothing but a troubled little girl who was living out a tug-of-war fantasy with guys, but quite frankly, he couldn't see what she saw in them. He asked her if she'd ever thought about getting with a real man, and said perhaps a war correspondent who would become the voice of WWE. He said, "Think about it, AJ, you could have all of this," and opened up his coat to show his dress shirt underneath and his tie, his body, I guess. He goes, "You could have all of this." AJ, I think, I couldn't tell if she was trying to keep her laughing or if she was telling being interested. She just was whatever. We get Daniel Bryan's music at that point. He cuts off Cole, comes to the ring, yells at Cole for makes sense that, just like the mainstream media, when things don't go your way, you make things up and tell untruths, and this story's not about you, Cole. He said he knew AJ better than anyone, and he knew that she was taking her special ref job very seriously and that she would do a good job. He said that he knew that she didn't mean to put both of them through the table, that it was just supposed to be for CM Punk, and that he forgave her. He started to say more, but CM Punk's music hit, and that guy got a great pop from the crowd. He came to the ring and chased Cole out. He told him to get out. Cole started arguing. Punk said, "Get out." And so Cole finally did. Punk just lays down the intervention-type truth on AJ, says that, she's not in a good place mentally. He should have told her before now, but he was not going to lie to her to get something that he wanted. Brian comes to him and says that, it's a load of crap. You're just trying to work an end around with your passive-aggressive comments. He said Punk needed to convince AJ to be on his side because there was no way Punk could beat him straight up. Brian said Punk didn't care about AJ. He was the only one who cared about her. Punk dropped his mic and shoved Brian. Brian dropped his mic and shoved Punk back. It looked like they might square off with AJ in between them, but she kept her arms up and separated them. She then turns and faces Brian and lays a long, wet, sloppy kiss on him that goes on for entirely too long before CM Punk finally leaves the ring and stands on the floor looking very dejected. He starts to walk away as she breaks the kiss. She sees him, jumps down onto the ring floor, spins him around, and lays an equally, if not longer, wet, sloppy kiss on him, and then skips up to the top of the ramp, chanting yes the whole time, while the other two guys looked confused going into commercial. I'm going to try to get past the hyperbole here because it's the best thing in WWE television right now. It just is. It's the best story. AJ has done more to entertain me than anybody else has in WWE in a long time, and I'm just blown away each and every week by this. But I'm going to try to keep from going over the top here and say, one, the crowd loved it when she kissed CM Punk. I mean, when after she had kissed Brian, when she kissed Punk, the place went absolutely insane. So the live crowd was really digging the whole episode as well. I thought all four people did good here. Cole was ridiculous, but he was expected to be ridiculous. Brian played his part perfectly. Punk played his part perfectly. She played her part perfectly. And I didn't see, I mean, once she kissed Brian, I kind of thought she would kiss Punk too, but as far as leading into this, I didn't expect this to be the case where she was going to be completely ambiguous by this. I don't have a good feel of what she's going to do.
No, and that's the best part of it. I kind of disagree with you on Cole, though. I kind of felt his presence was almost entirely superfluous. I mean, if he would have introed that video package and AJ would have started to speak and Brian would have cut her off right at that point, it probably would have been fine. But we had that weird moment where he, like, tried to turn the conversation from, you know, her, how upset he was at her about her actions to, hey, you want to come back to my place later, you know? It was just like, that felt like, and it wasn't even talked about after Brian and Punk came out. And then we're expected to have Cole go right back on commentary and take him seriously. I thought that whole situation was just beyond bizarre. But the rest of it I thought was great. I mean, Punk, Brian, and AJ are absolutely the most entertaining things going on right now in WWE, and I don't even think there's any doubt about it at this point. I mean, AJ has managed to take the character that she's played before in independent promotions, just doing the crazy woman bit, and translate it into a big time WWE storyline, and I think it's worked masterfully. She deserves all the credit in the world, and Brian, and Punk are almost idiot proof. You know, they're just so level headed, and they understand their own character so well that they could go out there and have fun even if AJ wasn't involved. So she's just been the icing on the cake thus far.
Let me ask you just a quick kind of business question. Do you think that they can find a way to monetize AJ? I mean, people are not going to pay to see AJ. They'll pay to see AJ involved with, a guy like this. But, is there a way that they can turn, I mean, she is adding so much to this. Is there a way they can monetize her by herself?
Make her the GM, maybe, I guess. If you wanted to actually put her in a prominent weekly role where she could just mess with people just because she's nuts. I mean, that seems to be the most obvious one. But I don't know how long that would last either. You know, it takes a lot of creative effort to come up with new and interesting ways for someone to be insane. You know, she'd have to rotate who she was picking on, I guess.
Yeah. It could be interesting. I mean, if they're going to do the authority figure, at least it's something different. It's not just straight up babyface, straight up heel, general manager, and someone who's going to be kind of all over the map. So I'd at least be something different there. I could see that. Back from commercial, Santino Marella is introduced. We see three foreign people on the floor, and that means it's time for your jingoistic match for 4th of July. Sure enough, we get Santino Marella, Sergeant Slaughter, and Hacksaw Jim Duggan versus Unico, Camacho, and Drew McIntyre, and of course, Team USA wins. 2 minutes and 25 seconds, everybody hits all their spots. Santino hits the Cobra on Unico for the win. Standard filler, the crowd's chanting USA for the Italian. What else is there to say?
Yeah, there was a Canadian playing an Italian as the captain of the U.S. team with two guys who are at least 20 years past their prime, if not more. So, yeah, there's not a whole lot you can expect from this match. I mean, they worked in some of the, the Jim Duggan clothesline, and, Slaughter got at least, I don't even think he was in the match for very long. He might have just got his entrance and maybe one or two offensive moves. But it was what you expect, a short match with the U.S. champion picking up the win. I don't know. It is what it is. I have such low expectations for Santino in the U.S. title that it's hard to annoy me with them anymore.
Backstage, we have Teddy and R-Truth. Well, we're at the party and they show everybody kind of again. You get Teddy and R-Truth talking to Invisible Little Jimmy. The music stops. There's a command to stop. Everyone turns around. Damian Sandow is standing there holding the plug of an extension cord, and I thought it was a nice little touch. He starts running everybody down, trashing him. He gets in Ryder's face, who's standing there. They jaw back and forth for a while. He punches Ryder. Ryder punches him back. They fight. Ryder knocks him down right in front of the food table. The food and stuff was on. Ryder sees the punch bowl, picks it up with everyone chanting, "Do it." He slings it, but Damian Sandow ducks, and it absolutely drenches Eve. I will give Zack Ryder this. The dude has great aim because she was in that white linen dress, and it was red punch, and she was red from neck to the bottom of that dress, and you could see her underwear underneath the dress. That was evidently very clear. And the only reason we didn't have a true wet T-shirt contest is because she had that big, silly, "Hi, my name is Eve" tag that was thicker on her chest. But everything else you could see through after she was dunked with that. Teddy laughed at her and said, "Now, how was he put it? This is my kind of party," and Eve stormed off upset going into commercial. It makes me proud to be an American to sexually harass a woman on on Independence Day, doesn't it, you?
Yeah, that was pretty much his Teddy's revenge for all the torture she put him through, and hopefully this closes up all of Teddy's storylines. And do you think he's going to be on TV anymore? I hard to predict, I guess, but I would assume that this is him going away for a while. Maybe, I don't know, but it was brief, and I like that they advanced the Sandow and Ryder story. I mean, that kind of pleased me more than anything, and you got a decent shot of Eve's blue underwear, if that's your kind of thing.
After commercial, we have Kurt Hawkins, Tyler Rex in the ring. Hawkins calls out Ryback, says he's making a personal challenge. Fifth match of the night, Ryback squashes Kurt Hawkins 1:09. Ryback tosses him around. Hawkins gets no offense, wins with his finisher, and his tag team partner, Tyler Rex, got in the ring and laughed at him after it was all said and done. I guess there are no indie shows or indie guys that live close enough to Corpus Christi who could come in and get killed by Ryback tonight. Is that the idea, or do you think he's actually moved on to the bottom of the card for WWE?
Well, I guess I hope it's the latter. I mean, I wouldn't want to see him destroy Hawkins and then go right back to Jobbers next week. You know, you want to hope he continues moving up. I guess the biggest question that remains for Ryback is, can he talk, and is he going to be able to carry a match where he has to sell somebody else's offense? I mean, it's a lot more questions than answers on Ryback. But I mean, what we've seen so far is that the guy looks great when he can continuously beat somebody down for 2 minutes, and I guess that's probably not the biggest challenge if you're a pro wrestler, but it's a good introduction to a guy who looks as jacked as he does. Now I want to see him with either find a voice, whether it's a manager or or him talking himself, and get an actual story going. I mean, I don't know how much more you can take of this and have people, not chant Goldberg at him.
Yeah, well, there were some audible Goldberg chants tonight. I mean, it's getting worse by the minute, but they don't seem interested in doing much more. So they're going to have to move him along, or that's really going to settle in, and I think that'll handicap the poor guy if they don't do it. And that's not his fault. That's purely creative's fault. So I hope they realize that and move on. We get a video recap of Sheamus and Del Rio's altercation from the beginning. Matthews announces that Sheamus will not be able to compete in the 20-man Battle Royal, which he hyped for next. And after commercial, we got Donald Trump's favorite Raw moment, which was the night he dropped the money on the crowd. I missed the date. I guess it was before WrestleMania 26. Is that right?
I thought it was earlier than that.
24?
24, maybe?
20. Yeah. Was it 25? I'm on the spot. My memory doesn't work like that. Whatever it was, but it was that year that he took over Raw and ended up dropping money on the crowd. We get a video for the new sci-fi series that debuted after the show. I missed the name. Teddy Long comes out, thanks everyone for allowing him to be GM, and said that it was time to hold the battle royal for the person who would be the GM the next week. We get Del Rio's entrance, Kane's entrance, Swagger's entrance, John Cena's entrance. He got a great pop from the crowd. Corpus Christi definitely seen the country. After commercial, we got most of the guys are in the ring at that point. Lord Tensai finishes his entrance. And then we get CM Punk and Big Show for our sixth match of the night, final match, your main event. Zack Ryder, again, defeating or winning the 20-man Great American Bash Battle Royal at 10 minutes and 48 seconds was the time I had. You get about half of the guys eliminated before the commercial break. After the commercial break, some things settle in. We get a big Cena Superman moment where he's able to fight off Del Rio, Dolph Ziggler, and was it Kane all at the same time? Tensai, Del Rio, and Ziggler all go after Cena. Cena fights them all off. He teases the five-knuckle shuffle on Ziggler. Del Rio runs at him, so he just tosses Del Rio over the top. Pops Kane up and hits him with an attitude adjustment. Tensai attacks him at that point. We've got Cena being a hero. Cena ends up tossing Tensai out. Big Show sneaks up and tosses him. More rapid fire. We get Ziggler and Big Show going out at the same time. Ziggler had the sleeper on Big Show. Kane tosses them out, and so we end up with Kane and Ryder. Kane's tossing Ryder all over the place, but Ryder is able to slip out at one point, hit the Broski boot, sets up for that leg lariat that he does, the Rough Ryder, but Kane catches it, listening for a chokeslam. Ryder escapes, pulls the ropes down as Kane charges at him. Kane eliminates himself, and Ryder gets a huge pop from the Corpus Christi crowd. They were really happy to see him win, and he will, of course, be GM next week. You know, Battle Royals are what they are, and this one was not, you know, neither great nor good for Battle Royals, kind of middle of the road. And then we talked about top of the show. Good to see Ryder get a win and who we got the win of.
Yeah, I mean, that was you know, them kind of tying up, you know, Ryder getting something back on Kane after being, you know, basically debilitated by him in storyline a couple of months ago. So, you know, that's really the newsworthy event in the match. There's not a whole lot else to talk about. I mean, it was a pretty mediocre TV battle royal, you know, with the commercial right in the middle that kind of, you know, took you out of the, you know, whatever tension they were trying to build, you know, with little feuds inside of the battle royal. But, you know, it worked for what it was. You know, it was nice to see somebody who wasn't one of the major weekly players kind of get a win. Somebody gets featured who isn't normally featured on, you know, for any extended length of time on TV. So I'm happy for Ryder, and it was nice to see him get something back on Kane. And hopefully this means they're actually going to put him in a story. You know, and Sandow looks to be the immediate first opportunity.
And I think he's a great guy. When we talked about this, Sandow needs a great foil. I like the idea of it being Hornswoggle at one time. I think Zack Ryder, for all intents and purposes, is the same basic character as a Hornswoggle. And I think that he and Damian Sandow could have a very synergistic feud that both guys come out of bigger than they should, considering their current places on the card. I think both guys could really benefit from that feud. We'll find out next week. And that's all we've got for this week. That's your Great American Bash Live SmackDown audio review. Jake, anything you want to add before we get out of here? I want to wish everyone a happy Independence Day.
Yeah, you know, just everybody have a good time tomorrow on the 4th. You know, avoid the heat as much as you can if it's going to be as hot everywhere as it will be here in Minnesota. And, you know, we'll catch you after the holiday.
And we will be providing coverage, I guess, today, as you listen to this, the plan is to post this on Wednesday morning. So you'll be, you know, whenever you're listening to this, if you're listening to this on Wednesday, we'll be around and keeping an eyeball out for major news. But other than that, we're going to treat it as a holiday, not a whole lot of news being put up on the site unless it's just major and breaking. Things get back to normal on Thursday. Jason and I, of course, will be around for .NET Weekly. Of course, no Jake and I Friday night on the replay. But you can read our reports anytime you want. We'll be back next week, next Saturday, for that All Access SmackDown audio review. And if you want to catch out .NET Weekly this Thursday when things get back to normal, now's your opportunity. Head over to ProWrestling.net. Look on the right-hand side of the page. Click on the .NET member sign-up link. $7.50 a month if you want to take 30 days. $5.50 a month if you take the annual option. Save $24 for the year. And again, you'll have access to all the audio, the ad-free version of the site, and access to the .NET member forum and blog section. Again, if you're listening to this Wednesday before shooting off fireworks, have a happy and safe 4th of July. Make sure you come back with however many fingers you start off with. Remember, the instructions are light fuse and get away, not stand as close as you can. We'll see you guys back next week for another audio review. Until then, everyone, have a great 4th of July, and take care.